Hi there, thanks so much for listening. Beginning of a new week here on the Nick Luck Daily Podcast and the run-up to the 150th Kentucky Derby. A truly historic run for the Roses, and you'll be hearing a bit more about it during the episodes over the course of the week. But if you want to follow your American racing, do your research, and you don't live in the United States, then the best place to do it is on the Racing app. Download the Racing app now, and free of charge, you can get all the past performances and one-click video form for all the runners in the Kentucky Derby and every American horse race. And you don't need to have a betting account. You just need to get on the Racing app and get cracking.
You're listening to Nick Luck Daily. This edition is brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis. By the Racehorse Owners Association. And by the Racing App, in partnership with FitzDares.
Good morning, welcome to the show. It is Wednesday, May the 1st, up with a lark here in Kentucky, 3 days in advance of Run for the Roses 150. Later in this show, I'll be talking to trainers involved, amongst them four-time Derby-winning trainer D. Wayne Lucas, a complete legend of the game and a man who this year is teaming up with a scion of a dynasty that Lucas himself has been associated with for 65 years. It's quite a tale. Victory for them would lift the roof off Churchill Downs, and quite a roof it is too now, surrounding the twin spires with the construction of the brand new paddock, which would be the envy of any racecourse anywhere in the world. What else today? Well, I'll be catching up with all the action from Punchestown, and no better person to do that with than Jane Mangan, who, as predicted right at the back end of yesterday's podcast, enjoyed a wonderful day as her father, Jimmy, and mother, Mary, and owner, JP McManus, struck in the Grade 1 Novices Chase with Spillane's Tower. Could that horse be a Gold Cup horse for next year? I suspect he might. And today, of course, is the Gold Cup at Punchestown. Thoughts on that as well. I'll also be talking to trainer Paul Webber, renowned as a bloodstock agent, renowned for three decades now as a trainer of jumps horses in the UK. He's handing in his trainer's license. I speak to him in an interview that, I have to confess, left me feeling quite sad and rather nostalgic, wishing him very well later in the programme. But let's start today by focusing on the clarity which we have been given to a certain extent by the Gambling Commission and the Betting and Gaming Council on affordability checks, both financial vulnerability checks and spend limits, and the interim industry code that has been put in place as regards the latter. And for more on this and for more clarity, I've been speaking to Wes Himes, who's the Executive Director of the Betting and Gaming Council.
We have now created a voluntary industry code on customer checks, as the title goes. This is meant for operators who can voluntarily choose to adopt the code, in which case they will then be obliged to enforce that in their policies. So as operators adopt that, they will integrate it into their policies, which will provide a new interim regime, which will sit in parallel to what to the Gambling Commission's forthcoming financial risk project. And therefore, punters then will basically undergo a regime that, if they hit the two triggers, operators are obliged to take actions in regards to those punters in order to identify any financial risk. The entire purpose of this code is to reduce the number of document checks that have become pervasive across operators, and therefore move to a different system, which will provide hopefully some relief and consistency to the way operators this particular element.
All right, so to avoid any confusion, let's just analyze the numbers. What are you now going to be subject to, and at what levels, and how does that differ from what we were going to expect?
Absolutely. So just to be clear, all operators currently already have what we call monitoring systems. These start from the day that a customer registers with an operator. And these look at a various number of markers of harm. But what we haven't had is some consistency about what we do in relation to customer spend. So what will happen is a customer will continually be monitored from the time they join an operator, just so the operator can identify any harm. However, if they get to the point where they have a net deposit loss, so that is deposits minus withdrawals, and at 5,000 and they wish to go above that in any given month, then the operator will be obliged to conduct at least one, if not more, of a series of checks. These checks can go from what we call self-certification, in which the customer needs to provide or disclose some information, to other things such as open source information, which you might get from Companies House or other sources, or of course products provided by a regulated data provider. And all of this will give you an idea of the financial risk of the customer, at which point then the operator will have to make a decision as to whether they will allow that increased spend or have to take other measures in relation to that customer. And that's on a monthly basis. We have to and are obligated under current regulation, and operators choose to do this, is to monitor various other, what we would call non-spend related markers of harm. And we have to continue to monitor those. So there still may be intervention by operators if those particular markers of harm become acute for a customer. So that doesn't go away. But the purpose of the code today is to reduce the number of document checks that are triggered by the issue of customer spend.
Wes, two points really stick out for me here. And clearly this is a better situation than the one that was on the table initially in terms of spend. But first, a 5,000 limit, if the whole point of affordability checks and the whole point of this review was to really make sure we had a responsible attitude to gambling related harm, then isn't that a number that really doesn't do one thing or the other? It neither sorts out gambling related harm, nor does it really help a sport such as horse racing, because so much of horse racing's turnover is supplied by people who will still be caught in a net of a £5,000 monthly rolling deposit.
Yeah, so on the first point, this does not absolve operators from identifying gambling harm. As I mentioned at the beginning, this does not include any of the other markers of harm. And of course, an operator will need to take strong intervention if they see those markers increasing for a customer. And there's a whole range of interventions that an operator can choose from in order to try to mitigate any harm that may be happening or likely to happen. So that none of that goes away in this code. In relation to horse racing, there will be a reduction in the number of requests for documents from horse racing punters. These numbers allow the operator to conduct those checks at the 5,000 and 25,000, whereas before, often these numbers were a lot lower in terms of compelling operators to produce documents.
But as you say, it's only an interim code. What are you doing during this interim period to ensure a solution that is acceptable for all beyond that?
What will happen is any operator can take this up. I suspect that a large number of operators will be interested in taking this up. This scheme will continue while the Gambling Commission conducts its test pilot on the financial risk assessments in their consultation. But this will provide some consistency in what has otherwise been an inconsistent market and has led to these sort of intrusive document checks that we've had to date. So this should definitely provide relief, but it also, to be very clear, obligates the operators to conduct these checks because they do have an obligation to identify financial risk and apply that to the customer profile.
Wes Himes there, Executive Director of Policy for the Betting and Gaming Council. Julie Harrington, a BHA chief executive, has released a statement saying she's reassured the government has listened to racing's long campaign against the affordability checks it first set out in its white paper. It's to the credit of racing fans and the wider racing industry that their lobbying has so clearly been heard. She says, while today's announcement on increased thresholds is a move in the right direction, it does not yet secure a more sustainable future for racing's finances. We remain concerned there's no update on the government's review of the levy promised more than a year ago and the threat that represents to racing's financial well-being. It's also vital that new rules on anti-money laundering checks are set out as soon as possible to avoid racing bettors being caught up in separate requests for financial documents. All right, well, industry expert Neil Channing is with me now. Wes Himes saying this is good news for horse racing. Neil, can horse racing take significant comfort from what, as we expected, were significantly increased limits on spending checks as part of this interim code?
Well, I don't know. Yes and no, I guess, is the answer. The first thing to say, I think, is that people that said it's a waste of time filling in the petition, it's a waste of time answering any consultations, it's a waste of time writing to your MP, none of this would have happened if people didn't do that in huge number. You know, if there'd never been a petition and nobody had written to their MP and 6,000 people hadn't filled in the original consultation, they were talking about £100 a month 2 years ago. We have moved on some way. And I think people should acknowledge that and give some credit to the people that have worked hard behind the scenes. And that includes people within horse racing. You often hear, oh, the Racing Post, what are they doing? They were never talking about this 5 years ago. Well, they did talk about it and they banged on about it every day. And I think you have to give them some credit for that. Also, you know, the race courses and people in racing have pulled together. Having said all of that, it's kind of rubbish, isn't it? The limits are massive compared with what we thought they'd be, which means that it won't capture lots of small punters that don't need to be captured. But also what it won't do is probably capture loads of problem gamblers that would have been captured. You know, you can easily be a problem gambler without depositing 5,000 in a month or whatever. And from a racing point of view, it still captures pretty much every person who owns a racehorse. And a large percentage of the people that actually contribute to the income of racing and the prize money. So it's a bit neither one thing nor the other. What it is also, though, is a sort of change in the mood music from where we were. And obviously, we are likely to face a change in government. And it feels to me like generally on all things, Labour are sort of saying, well, we're going to be kind of lumbered with the way it's been left by the Tories. Not just in gambling and lots of things. And we're not going to be able to change everything on day one. Well, I can tell you one thing. Gambling reform is not going to be one of the things that they have, like, in the top five things they need to do when they come in. And to an extent, they're just going to sort of stick with how it is, let the Gambling Commission sort it out, and not really do much. That's my feeling. So I guess any move that happens now towards less in terms of affordability checks and people poking through your bank account is probably going to stick after the election.
Mm. Also, to what extent will these numbers, £25,000, £5,000 a month, be fodder for the abolitionists or the prohibitionists?
Well, I mean, this is a problem, isn't it? Because they are kind of huge numbers. I mean, for your average man in the street, you know, they're kind of ridiculous numbers. Most people in this country, their average bet is less than a tenner. But most people that contribute towards the funding of horse racing, their average bet is considerably bigger. And of course, you can bet £5,000 a month and not be a problem gambler, and you can bet £100 a month and be a sick, addicted gambler, which is why, to an extent, the thresholds are just nonsense anyway, and using existing things like someone having their debit card declined 6 times in a day, somebody staying on the site for 16 hours at a time, somebody making 20 deposits during an afternoon. Those kind of things, which they've had for years and they can see for years, would have been a much better way of trying to identify problem gamblers than using any kind of affordability or thresholds on spending.
And so on it rolls and on we roll. Kentucky in a minute, Punchestown first. Spillane's Tower was the winner of the Grade 1 Novices Chase last night. For Jimmy Mangan, whose daughter Jane is my guest today. There must have been some celebrations last night, Jane, but I know that you will be able to provide the most clear-headed morning after the night before. What a day for all of you.
Yeah, I'm precious paint, and I spoke to my mum and dad this morning early, and they bounced out of bed, I'd imagine, as well. The horse is 100% this morning, and yeah, it was one of those magical days, because I suppose when we went to Fairy House for the Willow Worm, the Grade 1 there, you were either good enough or you weren't, because we hadn't figured out whether he was a Grade 1 horse. He proved there that he was over that trip over 2.5. And there was the notion of leaving him off out for the summer. Summer's grass was broached. And then I think there was an element of, well, JP was sending, I know the way you're thinking, and Corbett's Cross to Aintree. So why don't we hold on to Punchestown, hope it rains, and roll our dice over 3 miles to find out for next season whether he stayed that trip. And all of those stars had to align. JP's horses went to Aintree. The rain came, the ground was perfect, and he stayed the trip. So I can honestly say, Nick, from watching it, I didn't enjoy one bit of it because there was an element of pressure yesterday. He had proved himself to be Grade One horse, and now it was a case of backing it up and stepping up because it was a better race. It took a lot of convincing to get my mother to go. She rarely goes racing, and she thought she was going to jinx the horse. Dad forgot his hat. God forbid, if the horse got beaten, the hat was going to get the blame. And it was one of those when they were all there. It was a great thrill, and there was a huge cohort from our local village at home came racing to Punchestown yesterday because I think the horse is after getting a little bit of a following.
It's a great tribute for, yes, bringing your horses along in measured fashion, but also when you feel that they are getting there, running them to educate them. 28th of October this season he started. We're now the 1st of May. He's had 7 runs, the last 2 Grade One wins, the last 4 of them in graded company. I mean, they're there to race, Jane.
100%, yeah, that's always been Dad's mindset. You know, people have race horses because we are in the entertainment industry and they are there to entertain their owners, and that's what he's done nothing but progress all year. We've tried him over a variety of trips. He got beaten over 2 miles fair and square by Blood Destiny, and when we met him over 2.5, we had more gears for him there. So yeah, he's a horse that has a great constitution mentally as well. He's a behind the bridle racer. He's not a flamboyant jumper, but he's very accurate. So he gives himself and his rider a chance, I suppose, to get the trip and to get through the season. But I think yesterday, overall, Nick was a testament to running horses. Like Mystical Power, hard race in the Supreme, hard race at Aintree, wins yesterday, arguably career best performance. The other horse, Daddy Longlegs, had run within the last week at Ludlow. And you can say, okay, that was only a piece of work. He won so easily, but he still travelled to the UK to do it. So yesterday was kind of a testament to get out and run your horses.
And that seems to be a bit of a McManus strategy at the moment as well. Because if you look at John Bonn, Spillane's Tower, Mystical Power, yeah, they're all horses who've had plenty of racing this season.
And I know the way you're thinking. Yeah,
By the way, you're
100%.
thinking, yeah, absolutely. So yeah, he knows he wants to get out there and enjoy it, and hopefully that'll be a policy that more people will follow in due course. Could you win the Gold Cup next year? That's the key question.
He could, if they go that way. I think he's now thrown his hat into the ring. We all know that JP has a depth of quality there, but I suppose that question was asked to me in the immediate aftermath of yesterday's race, and it kind of annoyed me, if I'm honest, because we were in the midst of something that we had never experienced. Like we've won, you know, we have 10 or 12 horses in training. Try and quantify who's the last man or woman in Ireland to have a horse of this caliber with that number of horses. I'd venture to say it's probably Peter Casey with Flemingstar. We've had great wins and handicaps. Connacht Castle won a Grade One, but now, as Dad said on your podcast a couple of months ago, he is now the best.
Yeah.
I doubt
Luckily,
it.
luckily, your dad didn't replicate Peter Casey's post-race interview.
No, well, Peter was his own character, but no, yesterday, yeah, I think Dad is as much of a following as the horse. But look, there were 28 Grade Ones run in Ireland this season to yesterday. Willie's won 18 of them. And Gordon has won 6. Martin Brazel and Joseph have won one a pair, fast or slow. And Joseph, of course, won yesterday with Banbridge, and Dad has won 2. It's just very hard to compete, and you need a horse to take you there. And I feel like this horse resembles or represents a lot of trainers, probably 95% of trainers in this country anyway, who feel like they can't do it anymore. If they get the raw material, they can do it. And it's only human nature that if you go a prolonged period of time like we have without having a good horse, you are naturally going to doubt your own ability. You're going to doubt your facilities. You're going to doubt and question everything. But I think, you know, when you have the car to go fast, you can drive it.
I mean, you mentioned Joseph O'Brien there. He did win the Grade One yesterday with Banbridge, the 2 mile champion chase, overhauling Captain Guinness right on the line. In the end, that little bit of a pull to the line has really helped him. He did dig in, didn't he?
He did. Look, Banbridge is probably best at 2.5 miles, and Captain Guinness is probably best at 1.7 miles, and that's what the race at Cheltenham is. The Champion Chase is just short of 2 miles, and he did everything right. And I think he was literally, his pocket was picked in daylight, robbed of victory by a strong staying Banbridge, who had cheek pieces on for the first time, and he had his preferred better ground. We all know what he's like when the sun shines and the ground becomes halfway decent. Banbridge really flourishes. Mark Walsh did say after the race that he never felt comfortable on Dino Blue, that she didn't travel with the same fluency that she has done all year. But we talk about turning up Captain Guinness. I suppose a lot of people didn't give him the credit for Cheltenham, and again he's just been robbed again. So I was delighted for JJ Slevin in particular, who he's had a great second half to the season after winning the Irish National. But now they, fast or slow, will be a big one for him. Can he get revenge? Can he get sweet redemption for what happened at Cheltenham and win back-to-back Punchestown Gold Cups?
More from Jane in a moment. Here in Kentucky yesterday at Churchill Downs, big crowd as well for the Tuesday before the Derby, and that'll only get bigger and bigger with each passing day. First person I ran into was D. Wayne Lucas. He's got Just Steel running in Run for the Roses 150. It's an amazing story because Just Steel is going to be ridden by Keith Asmussen. Lucas goes back with the Asmussen family nearly 7 decades indeed. His grandfather rode for Lucas way back in the day. So it's lovely the way that history is really playing its part in this story. And I put it to Dwayne Lucas that he wasn't going to be kept out of Derby 150.
Well, I'm glad to be a part of it. I don't care if it's 150, 160, or 80. I mean, I like to be involved in it. If I got the horse and I got a chance to come over here, it's what I get paid to do.
There is no doubt that your horse is going to be hardy enough for this because he's had plenty of conditioning, plenty of racing, most experienced in the race. Is he getting better?
He's getting better. You know, what we look for is a horse that improves a little bit in, you know, the last 3 or 4 weeks. The race in Arkansas was his best race. He stumbled a little bit on the lead change at the quarter pole and it cost him some ground. But that was his best race. But he's improved every day since, in my opinion. He's getting more focused, getting better at doing what I want to do. So we're hopeful that he's got a great mother. He's got a mother that won the Guineas in Australia, Grade One Classic. So I don't think we got any problem with the mile and a quarter.
So when you first got him, when you saw his pedigree, were you always thinking, I ought to be able to make this a pretty good horse?
I thought he could be a good horse from day one. Yes, he was the one horse that I earmarked. I said, this is, if we got a Derby horse, it's either this one. And I earmarked the one that just ran, and he did the disappointment, of course. But we put our stamp on him early.
You stand here in this extraordinary new amphitheatre of a paddock. What do you make of it all? I must have got lost at least 4 times today.
Well, I think it's more spectator-friendly and set up for the spectators to get it up close and see all this. It's got a little bit of a Las Vegas beat to it with the flashing, the stall holes and all the stuff like that. But I think the horses will get rid of it. One thing, the horses are undercover, and it probably gives them a little bit of a chance to get away from the hype.
I just want to talk to you a little bit about Keith Asmussen riding for you as well. It's a nice little bit of racing heritage all wrapped up there, isn't it?
Well, I go back a long way. We've been friends. I've been a friend of that family for a long, long time. Hold on. And I was really happy to see him come along like he has and do as well as he has, and I feel very comfortable with him.
Good luck.
Thanks.
The magnificent, indefatigable Wayne Lucas. Now, Jane Mangan, what's going to win the other classics this weekend? The 1,000 and 2,000 Guineas sponsored by Kipco. We spoke to Odin O'Brien yesterday, said he would only have one representative in each race. Is that a measure of confidence in City of Troy, Andy Lang Ilang?
Yeah, 100%. I always prefer that, particularly in those classic races. When Aidan saddles too many, I get worried. I think, look, City of Troy, everything we have seen from him is out of this world. I just don't know whether I'd be getting involved at odds on prices. And I was looking at the odds yesterday and I felt that something like an Iberian, who I don't think was at his best when he met City of Troy at Newmarket last October, he's something around 20 to 1. I thought he was a bit of value. And then in the Phillies race, In my heart of hearts, I believe Ylang Ylang to be an Oaks mare. So I'd be very much in the Carol Burke camp with Fallen Angel, but it's really hard. You're in Kentucky for the Derby. It's really hard to split your brain in two. So you're having to split your brain in three or four to try and assess all these races. But at least the sun is shining now, and hopefully we get decent ground.
All right, Jane, what about the card at Ascot today? Not to be overlooked, I don't think, in the midst of all this.
No, and easily to get lost in translation, but it is a very good card. We saw Kyprios reintroduce himself to the world at Navan last week in impressive fashion. And I'm hoping that Trushan, Coltrane, or maybe even Sweet William can do that. It's not a big field. There's five going to post for the Sugarro, but currently Sweet William is top of the market. Whether he should be there is debatable because Coltrane, Quickthorn, Trushan, they're all superior rated horses. I'm not going to pretend to pick a horse at this stage of the year, but Trushan is coming back off a wind-up. Coltrane has had cheek pieces fitted for the first time. I think it's very much a case of get their season started and see how they fit in. And of course, the race after that is the Commonwealth Cup Trial, 6 furlong, Group 3, bigger field going to post at 10 runners. I thought El Bowden, quick turnaround from Jane Tappelheim, dropping back to 6 furlongs. I thought he was interesting after running such a good race behind Esquire at Newbury.
Well, I'm sure we read with a certain degree of sadness the announcement that Paul Webber would no longer train as of next season. Paul's been training for 30 years, took over from his father John at Crapriddy Lawn near Banbury, and the time has come to crack on and do something different. And Paul joins me now. Paul, just tell me what prompted the decision.
Well, there are a few things really, Nick. The main thing is that when Dad died in 1995, my brother and sister asked if they wanted to have a go here and decided not to. They were both busy chiropractors. So I said I'd take it on. And a few years later, I was given Dad's share. So I ended up being a partner with Mum in the place. And always knowing, I've always seen myself, to be honest, as a guardian of Cropperty Lawn rather than the owner. And knowing that when Mum popped her clogs, that there'd be half the farm would have to be shared out between my brother Anthony and sister Sally. So there was always going to come a time when we're going to have to find a hell of a lot of money. And unfortunately, I just didn't train quite enough winners or quite enough horses to make the sums add up.
And there'd be no thought of trying to train somewhere else. You're not so wedded to it that you have to have a trainer's license.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I had a wonderful time being a bloodstock agent and director of the Curragh Bloodstock in Newmarket. Johnny Harrington got me that job, and that I enjoyed that. And really, I sort of hurried back to train because Dad wasn't well. I always thought I might do it, and always thought that Newmarket might be a temporary home rather than a permanent one. But I think unless you've got an awful lot of horses and you're batting at the top, it's a very difficult business to run, and we've been losing plenty of money, for the last couple of years. And as Dad said, it's a wonderful way of life, and it's a great way of turning a shilling into sixpence.
Did it get you down over the last couple of years, or could you keep your spirits high, notwithstanding a reduction in the flow of winners?
Spirits dip, that's for sure. But I guess it's the love of horses that made me come down the stairs every morning at 20 to 6 to go and feed them. And there's always a thought that there might be something waiting around the corner. Unfortunately, once Indefatigable showed that she'd done enough in her racing life, there hasn't been one to fill her place, and the others are a bit young or just not quite up to it. And it's very difficult competing both at the sales now, which is something that we always used to be able to do pretty well, and finding more owners to fill the place.
Indefatigable was your Cheltenham Festival winner, and a dramatic one at that. I was thinking of some of my favourite Paul Webber horses, ones that sprung to mind. Time for Rupert, Patrick's 19th, Flying Instructor, I thought probably top the list. Brilliant jumper.
Brilliant jumper, family favourite, was half trained as my hack at the time. He'd do anything for you. I even put my then 3-year-old daughter onto him, Sophie, and led her pony. And for the first time in his life, he did something wrong, which was gallop back up the yard. with no Sophie with no reins and no pedals and a massive bollocking from her mother ringing in my ears. And he just quietly then slowed down, trotted and walked back into his stable because he knew he got a little child on top. He was a remarkable animal.
And in terms of on the race course, moments that have given you the greatest personal satisfaction, which would they be?
I think it's very difficult to divide between Royal Ascot and Cheltenham. I used to tell my mates in Newmarket, listen, it's easy, this Royal Ascot lark. We trained a couple of those ones, but we're finding it very difficult to win one at Cheltenham. You guys ought to try this. It's far more difficult. But I think to have winners at those two were particularly good. I wish we'd ridden Ulundi a little bit more forward in the 2002 Arlington Million when he got beat two heads and a neck, having previously won a Scottish champion hurdle. There have been some super days. Time for Rupert was obviously a favourite, and his battle with Big Bucks. I mean, I never thought we'd quite win that race because Paul Ruby didn't have to move. But that was always exciting.
And in terms of the future for Cropperty Lawn, it'll go on the market, I'm guessing. And do you believe that somebody will carry on training from there?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, it'll be on the market with Knight Frank. And I'm talking to Rupert Sweeting the other day. I think there are quite a few yards around in England that are on the market, and one or two have sold recently to sort of leisure horse people or people with children interested in eventing and things like that. But it's a very sustainable place. There's, you know, 130 acres of arable land that someone can make good money out of, and loads of lovely buildings to develop if one had the money or the business partner to do it with.
And you said you felt you were a guardian or a custodian rather than an owner necessarily. Do you leave it in the sort of shape that you can feel proud of?
Oh, I think so. It's quite fun to look at the old photographs, sort of 1956 onwards when Dad moved here. And it looks very, very different now. And that's the problem, is that, you know, we spend a lot of money and time and effort, and particularly both my wives have done fantastic things here. It is a gorgeous place. It'll be difficult to leave, but life moves on, and I hope that, you know, another door will open very soon.
I hope so for you, Paul. Thanks so much for talking to me.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks, Nick.
Paul Webber, who's enjoyed success in the Kentucky Sail Ring, as he has on jumps race courses in Britain through the last few decades. All the best to Paul. And it's back to the Bluegrass State we come now on the show to check in with another one of the Kentucky Derby 150 connections. This time trainer Michael McCarthy, who's responsible for Endlessly, better known as a turf horse, who races in the colours of the Ammerman family. They raced the Sire Oscar performance as well. I put it to Michael that he'd not had too many column inches this week, but probably didn't mind too much.
No, certainly not. I mean, obviously we're flying under the radar. Horses 4 for 5 on the turf. His only blemish on the grass is getting beaten in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf. 2 for 2 on the synthetic with the El Camino Real Derby, and then coming back and winning one of the two preps in Kentucky in the Jeff Ruby Stakes. Obviously in authoritative fashion. So we're flying a little bit under the radar, have no dirt experience here. He's trained very well. He'll find himself probably in the second or third tier of horses, but a mile and a quarter will not be an issue for him.
I adored his Sire Oscar performance because for a turf horse, he had so much tactical speed. It doesn't surprise me that his horse stock seemed to be so versatile. Is that what this horse has got, that little bit of tactical boot?
I wouldn't say he's got tactical speed. What he does have is a devastating kick. So probably, you know, from 3 furlongs home, he will be finding his best stride.
He's not an old grinder.
No, he's not a grinder. No, he's not an old grinder. No. As you can see by looking at him here around the paddock, he's taking everything in stride. So we're looking forward to see what happens on Saturday afternoon.
Do you have entertained bringing this horse to Europe?
I did, actually. I had thoughts of it actually after the Breeders' Cup. The Ammermans are sporting people, obviously, with the horse getting an entry into the Kentucky Derby and a free entry into the Preakness. They decided to go ahead and stay here stateside, but taking a horse to him like him over to Europe was big on my list.
So it could happen one day?
Definitely, yes. Okay. Yeah. If he stays in form, it would be it'd be something to certainly think about.
So whatever happens on Saturday, he's got a load of options going forward. You know what it takes to win big races on all surfaces. Can you quite envision it in your mind? Can you? You must have played the race out.
Oh yeah, I certainly have.
All right. So what happens?
I don't know. Like I said, in California, unfortunately, we're not even allowed to train when the racetrack is wet. So we're going to get wet and then some here. So look, I know what the horse is capable of. I'm responsible for the effort, not the outcome. I'll leave that up to Umberto and the horse when they get out on the racetrack. But I think he will be running late.
Enjoying the ride this week so far?
Yeah, having a great time.
Excellent. Michael, thanks so much.
Thanks, Nick.
Michael McCarthy. And from where I am to where I've just come from, we're off to Hong Kong again. And here's J.A. McGrath.
Nick, wasn't it great to be at Sha Tin last Sunday for FWD Champions Day? The atmosphere in the parade ring before the Champions Mile was unforgettable. There was something very special about the moment that the crowd started cheering their great champion, Golden 60. Reminded me of Winx coming onto the track before her fourth Cox Plate at Moonee Valley in Melbourne. Black Caviar appearing in the paddock before her dramatic Royal Ascot Triumph. Yes, memorable. Unfortunately, Golden 60 was unable to provide his adoring public with what they wanted so badly. He didn't win this one, but he was brave in battling for his fourth place behind Beauty Eternal in a Group 1 race run on seriously rain-affected ground. By the way, still no decision from owner Stanley Chan on whether Golden 60 will be retired. Most think he will be. 26 wins from 31 starts for £16.7 million, that is, in prize money. He's done a champion job for all concerned. Sha Tin drains very quickly, ultra-fast by any standard, but 100 millimetres of rain in the 7 days before Champions Day left its mark. That's 25 inches in old money. Very few tracks in the world could cope with such persistent torrential rain. Overall, it was a great day for Hong Kong, though. All three Group 1s won by locally trained horses. Invincible Sage stamped himself the sprinting star of the future in the Chairman's Sprint Prize. Huey Bowman must have been chuckling to himself when the leaders took each other on. And then there was Romantic Warrior, who was never travelling well at any stage, yet somehow managed to win the QE2 Cup. Defying the elements, defying the ground that he found difficult, he's a true megastar. And he was elevated to the top of the Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's rankings with that performance. Yes, he's number one horse in the world, according to TRC. Yes, a great day's racing. Today we come back to earth with some day-to-day stuff with 9 races at Happy Valley, and they look challenging races indeed. My best is Huey Bowman's Kazapapa in race 6. This is a maiden after 18 starts, but don't be alarmed by that. He's now found his true mark. He's in class 4. This is a 1650 metre race, just over a mile. And he's going to, I think, go in this time for Huey, trained by Tony Cruz. So race 6, number 6, Kazapapa to beat number 4, Jumbo Legend. And I'll give you one other. That's a little bit later on in race 7. Have a look at number 11, Ka Ying Chia. Andrea Atsini, who won the last race on Sunday as well. He's in great form, Andrea, and this can go in for him. Race 7, number 11, Ka Ying Chia, take him in a tote swinger with 6 co-partner prance. That's all on the Hong Kong beat this week. I'll have more for you next week.
Okay, Jane Mangan is still with me. Jane, do you have a tip for me for today?
Yes, not surprisingly, I'm coming back to Punchestown for the Louis Fitzgerald hurdle over 2.5 miles. I think Mr. Giff, despite going to Aintree where he was behind Mystical Power, can take advantage of dropping down in class in the 340. Mr. Giff ran very well in the Supreme as well for Willie Mullins Balltown and had one winner on the board yesterday. He's clawing back Jack Kennedy one winner at a time. He's now 6 behind. He'll be hoping to get another few on the board today.
Jane, thanks so much. Thank you very much for listening. That was Wednesday, May the 1st. We'll see you again tomorrow. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the Racing App in partnership with FitStairs.